Welcome to the RC3. Hello everyone, welcome to the talk of Tobi Buchberger from FH Campus Wien. He will talk about a special feature of TOX, a new kind of distributed instant messenger. Tobi will talk about the authenticated key exchange in TOX and how to do it right and secure. If you have any questions on the talk, please click on the chat tab below the video and leave us a message. Thank you. So, welcome Tobi.
Yeah, welcome everybody to my talk about adopting the noise key exchange in TOX. In this talk, I will present the results of my master's thesis, which I conducted this year, also on FH Campus Wien. Yeah, and I will start by shortly explaining what is TOX. TOX is a peer-to-peer messaging protocol and a free and open source library implementation thereof. This protocol provides features like instant messaging, voice calls, video calls, and screen or file sharing. The development of TOX started in 2013 as a reaction to Snowden's leaks regarding the NSA's mass surveillance of the internet, and is intended as an end-to-end encrypted distributed Skype replacement. And to avoid confusion, a short intro to the terminology in the context of TOX. So there is TOX, which is the name of the protocol in general. Then there is the implementation of the TOX protocol, which is called ToxCore. This is a network library written in C. And the clients, so the actual check clients that use ToxCore, have specific names, like QTOX, for example. So then a few more details on TOX. It is based on a cryptographic network library from Daniel J. Bernstein, which is called SALT. And the protocol consists of multiple modules. And the module which is relevant for this talk is the NetCrypto module, where the handshake is implemented. But there are other modules like a distributed hash table module and a general crypto module and so on. The cryptographic primitives that are used in TOX are the X25519 Diffie-Hellman function for the key exchange, the X SASE 20 stream cipher for symmetric encryption, and Poly 1305 for authentication. Then there is a distributed hash table, which is used to store peer information. And to add a friend in TOX, you need this user's TOX ID. And this TOX ID includes the static long-term public key of this user. So why am I doing this talk? Because there is a problem in the TOX handshake. For TOX to establish an end-to-end encrypted communications channel, there is something that is called an authenticated key exchange. And authenticated key exchanges are protocols to set up a shared secret key for a communication session. This enables two parties to communicate securely over an untrusted public network, like the internet. And such protocols are, for example, based on asymmetric cryptography like Diffie-Hellman. And the problem in TOX authenticated key exchange is that users are possibly affected by a so-called key compromise impersonation vulnerability. This vulnerability is in the TOX handshake because it is a homebrewed cryptographic protocol. Shortly, what does KCI mean? So key compromise impersonation enables reverse impersonation if a static long-term private key of a user is stolen. So if an attacker stole the private key of a user, it is trivial to impersonate this user, because if you stole the key of someone, you are more or less this person in TOX. And so you can start up a TOX client using that key, and you are this person. But with KCI, it gets even worse, because an attacker can also impersonate other people to you. So other TOX, so he can impersonate your TOX friends to you. So you, So he uses your key and you then think you're talking to a friend of yours, but actually you're talking to someone else. So, and this KCI vulnerability can also be used to mount man-in-the-middle attacks. The vulnerability was reported by Jason Donnerfeld in 2017, where Jason Donnerfeld is the creator of the WireGuard VPN. So to understand what this KCI issue is about, I will shortly explain how the TOX handshake looks like. So in a TOX handshake, there is an initiator, which is called Alice, and a responder, which is called Bob. And in fact, both peers can be initiator and responder at the same time. But to simplify this explanation, I will assume that only one peer is initiator. So, and at the beginning of the TOX handshake, there is a cookie phase, which is in place to mitigate some kind of denial of service attacks. Then there is an authenticated key exchange phase, which is in place to establish a shared secret key to encrypt the packets afterwards. And in the end, then there's a transport phase where just encrypted packets or messages or audio packets, etc., are exchanged. So during such a TOX handshake, to establish this end-to-end encrypted communications channel, there are in total 3x25519 key pairs involved. There is a key pair necessary for the cookie phase of the handshake, which is a distributed hash table key pair. Then there is a static long-term key pair used during the authenticated key exchange. So this public key is the one that's also included in the TOX ID. And then there is an ephemeral key pair used, which is then there to establish this session secret key and to use the this key afterwards by using symmetric cryptography. And symmetric cryptography in TOX is established by using X20 Poly-13-5. So let's shortly take a look at the authenticated key exchange phase of the TOX handshake. So as I said, both peers that want to perform such a handshake need to own a static long-term key pair, which identifies them, and an ephemeral key pair to establish the session secret. And the peer Alice is the initiator of the handshake, and peer Bob, which is abbreviated with B, is the responder to the handshake. And it starts like that. Alice sends the handshake message to Bob. This handshake message is encrypted by using a shared secret, which is based on the static long-term keys, the private key of Alice and the public key of Bob. This key is then used to encrypt the ephemeral public key from Alice for this session. Then Bob does the same by responding with a handshake message to Alice. And Bob uses his static private key and the public key from Alice and encrypts his ephemeral public key. After both peers successfully receive the handshake message of the other peer, they can use the elliptic curve defeatman operation to calculate the same shared secret session key. Alice by using her ephemeral private key, Bob by using his ephemeral private key, and by using the ephemeral public key from the other peer. So what does this authenticated key exchange provide for security? This authenticated key exchange, as it is currently, provides forward secrecy. It also provides mutual authentication, which means that both parties get authenticated during the handshake. Also, it provides key confirmation, which means that both peers prove the possession of the secret key. And it also provides deniability, which means that TOX users can deny having taken part in a specific communication session because the communications are authenticated but not signed. But as I said, it provides no KCI resistance, therefore it is vulnerable to KCI attacks. So I will show you now how a simplified KCI attack works. To perform such a KCI attack, there needs to be a few prerequisites met. So our setting is that the attacker, which is called Mallory, abbreviated with M, impersonates Bob to Alice. To do so, it is necessary that Bob is a Tox friend of Alice, and then the attacker Mallory needs to compromise the static long-term private key from Alice. He also needs to know the static long-term public key from Bob, for example, by knowing his Tox ID. And he also needs to generate an ephemeral X25519 key pair. So to perform such an attack, it works like this. So in this case, the attacker, Mallory, is sending a handshake message to Alice, and he does so by using the same shared secret as Alice would generate by using Alice's private key and Bob's public key. With this, he can encrypt the ephemeral his ephemeral public key. Then Alice will think it she received a handshake message from Bob and will answer the handshake message with the same shared secret, also calculated with the same private key and the same public key as the attacker, and encrypting their ephemeral public key. And in the end, the attacker and Alice are both able to derive the same shared session key by, again, using the exchanged public keys from the other and their private key. So, during my research, I found out that as I said, this vulnerability can be used to mount a man-in-the-middle attack on a Tox session. But during my research, I found out that the DHT key pairs involved in the cookie phase of the handshake make an actual KCI attack on the Tox handshake more complicated. This is because of this cookie phase. The attacker Mallory is not able to send valid cookie request or response packet on their own, which means that it is necessary that Alice and Bob need to be online at the same time and initiate a handshake on their own. So the attacker is not able to initiate a handshake on his own, as I showed you on the slide before. And if Alice and Bob initiate their handshake, then the attacker Mallory needs to interfere with the handshake packets after the cookie phase. He does so by intercepting the handshake packet from Alice. This handshake packet contains enough information to send valid handshake packets to both peers. Then the attacker performs a handshake with Alice and Bob separately and establishes two connections. And therefore, he also needs ephemeral key pairs for both connections. And if this was successful, then the attacker is now able to eavesdrop, modify, insert, or drop messages, which are exchanged between Alice and Bob. And Alice and Bob just think they are just talking to each other like normally. So as people don't like just to hear about theoretical vulnerabilities, but also want to see actual exploit of these vulnerabilities, I tried to implement such a man-in-the-middle attack program. But I discovered a few more difficulties for this attack, because if the attacker is using Alice's private key to start the Tox core instance, like Tox is designed, this Tox core instance from the attacker would announce itself in the distributed hash table. So if Alice and the attacker use the same private key at the same time, this would mess up the state in the distributed hash table. And I didn't find out if it's possible to start the Tox core instance without announcing the distributed hash table, because this would require more detailed understanding of the DHT module, and I didn't have time to look at this in detail during my thesis. So this maybe there is a solution to this problem, but if not, this attack may not be possible at all to exploit in practice. Additionally, it would be necessary to adapt Tox core further to be able to use the handshake information from from my peer in one handshake in a handshake with another peer. So if I intercept as a tapper the packet from Alice, I need to use the information from Alice handshake packet in the connection with Bob. And there would also be needed to implement a way to pass messages between two talks connections, because otherwise the attacker would need to paste the messages manually. Overall, this means that a complete redesign of the talks card library would be necessary to possibly make this attack available, which means that, unfortunately, I cannot show you a POC attack, but I will show you a proof of concept of the KCI-resistant talk handshake implementation. So how did I fix the KCI vulnerability in the talks handshake? There is a framework which is called Noise. This framework can be used to create so-called secure channel protocols based on Diffie-Hellman key agreement. A secure channel protocol is, for example, SSL or TLS or SSH. This framework was created by Trevor Perrin, who is the co-author of the Signal protocol, so from the Signal messenger. This framework provides formally verified authenticated key exchange constructions, which are also designed to protect against this KCI vulnerability. The framework is there so that developers do not roll their own crypto, so and just use the formally verified construction for Noise instead. And crypto protocols based on this Noise framework are already used in, for example, the WireGuard VPN. It's also used in WhatsApp for client-to-server communication, and it's also used in Slack, for example, for internal server-to-server communication. And I didn't implement the Noise framework myself, but instead I used an available open source library, which is called Noise-C. And this is just a C implementation of the Noise framework, which was implemented by Ruth Weddeley. So shortly an introduction to the Noise protocol framework. In a crypto protocol based on Noise, the parties involved have either long-term static Diffie-Hellman key pairs and or ephemeral Diffie-Hellman key pairs. Every Noise protocol starts with two parties exchanging handshake messages. There are different handshake patterns available in the Noise framework. These define which Diffie-Hellman public keys are exchanged, and a sequence of Diffie-Hellman operations which is performed. The results of these Diffie-Hellman operations get hashed into shared secret keys, which are used later to send encrypted transfer messages. And the handshake messages, which are exchanged in the Noise protocol, can already contain encrypted application chosen payloads. And such a Noise handshake pattern is instantiated by a specific Diffie-Hellman functions, cipher functions, and hash functions to give a concrete Noise protocol. And in the Noise specification, there is defined which cryptographic primitives are available. So how does a Noise protocol for talks look like? So as I already mentioned, there are these public keys which are exchanged using the talks IDs in advance. So talks users friend each other. So these are exchanged out of a band, for example, via email. The matching Noise pattern for this is called KK, but I discovered that in the actual talks core implementation, the responder of a talks connection receives the public key of the initiator from the initiator's handshake packet. So therefore, this is not compatible with the KK pattern, because to be able to receive a Noise-based handshake message, it is necessary to initialize a handshake state beforehand with both peer static long-term keys. So currently the talks handshake is incompatible with the KK pattern, but it may be possible to use the KK pattern by redesigning the net crypto structure a little bit. So I didn't want to do that yet. Therefore, my solution was to use the so-called IK handshake pattern. This handshake pattern requires that the initiator sends his static public key already encrypted in the handshake message. From a security point of view, it doesn't make a difference if I use the KK or the IK pattern, because they both provide the same security properties, including the KCI resistance. So we'll shortly show you how such a handshake pattern looks like in Noise. So there is a pre-message from the responder to the initiator where he sent his static public key. Then this is the delimiter for the active exchanged handshake messages. And then the first message is sent by the initiator. This includes the initiator's ephemeral public key, then already the defragment operation, which already gives us a secret key. This is used to encrypt the initiator's static public key, and then there is another defragment operation performed. Then the responder answers by sending his ephemeral public key, performing two additional defragment operations, which are all hashed into the same shared secret key. And this is the handshake pattern. And the full Noise protocol that is used in TOXT is shown here. So this string just tells us that the Noise IK pattern is used, that the X25519 Diffie-Hellman function is used. Then ChaCha20 is used as stream cipher for symmetric encryption. There is Poly305 used for authentication, and the SHA-512 hash function. This Noise protocol provides zero round-trip TRAM encryption, which means that in the handshake messages there are already encrypted payloads. And but you need to be aware of that the security properties for the handshake payloads are weaker than for the transport payloads then. The egg phase is 1.5 round trip time, because this would be one round trip, which means that one message from the initiator and one from the responder. But the egg phase is 1.5 round trip time, because the responder needs to receive the first transport message from the initiator to be assured of forward secrecy. And then the result of a handshake based on this Noise protocol are two so-called cipher state objects. And the cipher state objects contain a key used for symmetric encryption and the corresponding nonce. This is for the symmetric encryption. So how does this Noise protocol fit in the TOX handshake? As I mentioned, there are three phases, and the first phase, the cookie phase, remains unchanged in this Noise-based handshake. And as you may already noticed, the handshake payload encryption uses ChaCha20 instead of XSASA20, which is used in other places in TOX. This is because XSASA20 is not supported by the Noise framework. Then in the transport phase, there are two symmetric keys used instead of one, because there is one key for encrypting packets to send them to the other peer, and one key for decrypting packets received by the other peer. And this Noise-based handshake using this Noise protocol is now a formally verified construction instead of a homebrewed protocol like before. And I implemented this Noise protocol in TOX core in two different approaches. In my first approach, I used ChaCha20 for encryption during the handshake and also during the transport phase. And in my second approach, I used ChaCha20 during the handshake phase and then XSASA20 during the transport phase. And I will now shortly explain why there are these two different approaches. In the ChaCha20 based approach, I just adapted the existing functions in TOX core for the handshake to the new handshake. And it was this was possible by only adding one new function and only adapt the existing functions. The handshake packets look now slightly different because this is because the ephemeral public keys are sent unencrypted, and the initiator needs to include his encrypted static long-term key. You may remember from the slides before that in the old vulnerable handshake, the ephemeral public keys were sent encrypted, and it was not necessary for the initiator to include his encrypted static long-term key. Also, I didn't include a base nonce in the handshake packets because the nonces are now handled in this cyberstate object by the NoSQL library. And I adapted the functions in ToxCore, which are used to encrypt and decrypt messages, to use NoSQL functions based on ChaCha20 instead of the XR20 based functions which are in ToxCore. So then I finished this implementation. Then I needed to test it. I did this by building my modified version of ToxCore together with MiniTox, which is a minimal Tox client, and together with NoSQL. Then I started multiple MiniTox instances on a Debian VMware. And then I added these MiniTox instances as friends and tested packet loss between these instances by using FlakeNet. And then I discovered that this implementation solution works only if there are no encrypted packets lost, which is most likely to happen with a UDP-based protocol. This is because the nonces are saved in the cipher state. And if a packet is lost and the next packet is received, then the wrong nonce will be used for encryption, and therefore the nonces for the sender and for the receiver are out of sync, which means that the decryption will not be possible. So the solution to this problem could be that the nonce could be sent together with an encrypted message and set after receiving, set this nonce in the cipher state using a function which is provided by NoSQL. But I discovered that the NoSQL library is not compliant with the NoSQL specification in this case. This is because the nonce needs to be greater or equal than the current nonce in the cipher state. But this is not always the case if packets are received out of order. If I would do this, I would need to implement a new packet loss functionality. But there is already a packet loss functionality in ToxCore implemented, which is based on XR20. So, which leads me to my second implementation approach. This implementation approach uses XR20 during the transport phase and is a solution to this packet loss problem from my first implementation. Because, as I already mentioned, XR20 is not supported by the NoSQL framework. To circumvent this, I added two functions to the NoSQL library to be able to retrieve the symmetric keys after a successful handshake instead of these cipher state objects. Then I can use these symmetric keys with the existing XR20 polycell 5 encryption functions. And these functions are also using then the existing packet loss and out-of-order packet functionality in ToxCore. This means that I need to include the base nonces again in the handshake packets, as it is the case in the KCA vulnerable handshake. After I finished this implementation, I tested it again by using MiniTox and FlakeNet, and now I discovered that the handshakes are also successful if there is up to 50% packets loss on both sides of the connection. And also discovered that, and I compared it to a normal handshake, so a non-noise-based handshake, and I discovered that if more than 50% packet loss is too much for ToxCore or for the Tox protocol in general to establish a stable connection. So my work is not finished here. There's still some work to do in the future. For example, I could continue working on the POC attack program, but with the difficulties I mentioned, I most likely think that this vulnerability cannot be exploited in the wild. There are a few other things I could work on. As I mentioned, in the noise-based handshake, a noise will differentiate between an initiator and responder. But as I said, in the TOX protocol, as it is designed, both peers can be initiator and responder at the same time. So this is not ideal in the current implementation and could lead to practical problems, which means that the handshake could take longer than an old KCI vulnerable handshake. And also the error handling during the handshake implementation needs further testing at review. As I said, the noise-based handshake I implemented using the NoiseC library, where the NoiseC library implements the whole noise framework and therefore supports all handshake patterns and cryptographic primitives. But there is not everything necessary for the usage in TOX. Therefore, we could implement the noise AK pattern explicitly for the use in TOX. Then we would have no NoiseC library as a dependency for TOX core, and in general, less lines of code, which means less possible vulnerable lines of code. Further future work could be a redesign of the TOX handshake. As I said, the current proof of concept implementation of the noise-based handshake uses two different ciphers for symmetric encryption, charger 22 handshake and access 22 transport phase. This could maybe streamlined to only use one of these two ciphers. Also, my noise-based handshake is currently not backwards compatible, which means that clients using a TOX core version with the KCI vulnerable handshake would not be able to establish a connection to the noise-based handshake TOX core instances. And when we already redesigned the TOX handshake, we could maybe change the implementation to use the KK pattern instead of the IK pattern. There is also some other interesting functionality which Noise could provide. Noise enables session rekeying, which means that the key used for symmetric encryption could be updated after a defined number of messages. Also, it is possible with Noise to add quantum resistance by using an optional 256-bit pre-shared key. This is, for example, already implemented in the WireGuard VPN. And besides the handshake, it would be nice to conduct a full security analysis of the protocol and also of its implementation TOX core, because this wasn't done until now. So if you want to have additional information, there is the link to my full master's thesis. Right before my talk, there was an introduction to TOX talk from Anthony from QTOX. Then there is also a TOX crypto party, which is organized by SOF. And in general, for further information, you can visit us at our assembly and order on the free.irc channel. This is just a few related work. These are the references that I used during the talk. And I thank you for your attention. And special thanks to Franconian.net and the Hackerspace Bamberg for hosting the talk. And now I'm open to questions.
Yes, thanks a lot, Toby Buchberger, for your talk. If you have any questions on this talk, please use the addresses you see if you press the chat tab below the video, then you can send us a question. There are no questions by now, but I have a personal question, Toby. Why is it called noise protocol? What is the noise in this protocol? Have you any idea about this?
To be honest, I don't know actually where the noise is coming from. Or if I knew, I already forgot it.
Okay. So maybe in such sophisticated talks, people maybe have to think a bit about all this information you gave us, because we have no questions so far. But again, thanks a lot for your talk, and hope to see you again.
Thank you.
Oh, one question from the IRC channel. Please wait a second. Oh, there's somebody on the IRC channel asking about getting backwards compatibility by using a cookie, which would indicate which kind of handshake the responder expects.
Yes, we already thought about something similar. Yes.
Okay.
So this this is a problem that can be solved. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And another question from the IRC channel is coming in. But somebody making a joke. Is there a COVID-19 friendly way to alternative to avoid handshakes between users? But okay. But this is just a joke, I think. So COVID-19 is not a problem of using Tox, I think, even if Tox sounds a little bit toxic. Okay. So no more questions, I see. Toby, thanks again for having your talk here with us, and have a good day, and see you again. Bye bye.
Thanks. RC3.